Tonight, welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. High in the mountains above nowhere. November 5th already. November, my God. What a summer. And then, of course, I got the sidekicks here. And we got Steve Barish on the phone. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, sir.
So Steve was telling me he didn't understand the drug companies, that you can just go ahead and Start right where you...
Yeah, I was reading about cyclohexane and PCP, which is actually angel dust, and they're actually using it in a lot of the antidepressants.
Right.
And I'm just amazed, amazed that they're
all
using...
All of the antidepressants have one or the other or thereof.
Yeah, and it's just absolutely amazing that these inhibitors are actually being used, and they want to know why there's so many children that are committing some horrible acts in school. I mean, it drives them crazy. It drives them absolutely up a wall, and I can understand now. Last year we had a kid in Corning that had killed a friend right in a school, and he was on antidepressants. So there's a lot, you know, it's just absolutely incredible that these companies are making these products and feeding it to these kids.
Yeah, there's a, this started back when Rumsfeld, which is in the book, fired the FDA commissioner back when he was, the first time he was Secretary of Defense working for mm-hmm. Gerald Ford, which had been back in the 70s, 72 or 73.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happened was they put Rumsfeld appointed one of his goons as the head of the FDA, and then the next thing they did is they got aspartame legalized, and the FDA, and it failed every test, and the FDA wasn't going to pass it. That's why they threw out the other commissioner. I mean, so these commissioners, they just rule them out like a deck of cards, you know, when they don't want them around.
Right.
And so that's where it really started. The FDA, all they do is, you know, all they can really do now is go after people that make health claims over vitamins and stuff like that, or
right,
killing machines or whatever, you know, those kind of nuclear receptors if you're not careful. But the bottom line is that the drug companies, as we talked about it last week, all the heads of the drug companies, somewhere in the lineage, they've been indicted, jailed,
mm-hmm.
or something. They're all crooks, you know.
Yeah.
And like as we said last week, the universities are the ones that invent all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
testing on it, and get 15-20% commission on it. And then the drug companies want to say, oh, well, we're charging you $150 for five nystatins or five, you know, any antibiotic. And
right.
And that's because of research costs.
Right.
They don't even do any research. The universities do it.
You haven't... Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You have in your book here a little theory on drug companies' moral values. And it says Americans spend over $200 billion a year on prescription drugs.
Right.
Prescription drug costs are quite high for the consumer. We are led to believe that these high costs are due to research and development. But this is not true. Most research is done by Tavistock Institute, controlled by universities such as Johns Hopkins, Harvard Brown, Duke, MIT, Pennsylvania, and many others too numerous to list here. So, I mean, this book, what you're talking about right now, all this information is in your book.
Yeah.
But everything is in the book. It's just absolutely amazing.
What's really interesting is the fact that, you know, like Alex Jones, you know, people don't know whether Alex Jones is a government disinformationalist.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's for real. I mean,
mm-hmm.
go on the internet and type in Alex Jones. He sure as heck won't let me on his show. We've tried.
Mm-hmm.
We did send his producer a book. We've not gotten no comment from him.
Right.
Went down to to Art Bell. He just got his the other day in the Philippines. He put his book out to see who's afraid of it and who isn't. I know Art Bell won't be afraid of it, but I'm sure Alex Jones doesn't want to tangle with me because he doesn't see, you know, his information that he puts out, and I was just on his network Saturday night, the Genesis Network, with another group, George Butler on the Secret Truth show, and you can Google that and on Genesis Network and listen to it if you want. I've tried to get on his show a few times through a couple of friends of mine that actually know him, know the people that are close to him, and he's backed off. The thing is, I listen to him, and I hear him talk about the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear him mention angel dust or PCP.
Right.
He'll go down the negative road with the stuff, but he won't cross over the bridge.
Right.
Now, in having worked in intelligence and done a lot of stuff in my life, I know there's certain things in certain agencies that I won't say or go after, especially on the family level. I don't go after personalities.
Right.
Follow me?
Yes.
I have anything to do with, you know, defense or homeland security,
right.
Even though I don't, or the airport inspectors, I don't cross the line there because I respect what they're trying to do, because out of 10 of them, 8 of them are probably good and really love the United States and the people, and there's 2 of them that are, you know what.
Right.
Those 2 will cause problems, so rather than go there, I just go up to their doorstep and, you know, put a sack of, you know what, and then light it on fire and ring the doorbell, basically.
Right.
And that's how you have to do it. With Alex Jones, I've been up to his doorstep a few times. I've listened to his shows. He talks about the prisons and the martial law, and he goes into the Constitution, but to be honest with you, when you get into drugs and some of the stuff that we cover, he's cold, he's stone cold on what he's talking about. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't, if he does, he doesn't put it out. Now, he might know a lot, but that's where I draw, that's where you can see where this information comes.
Right.
And as I said previously, many times on this network, and even on the George Norrie show a few times, and even with Ian Punna, I said that you know, there's been a mind control program going on for a long time.
Right.
That's why we developed in the very beginning, you know, and did you read the story about how the Star Warp came?
No, I haven't got that for you.
Yeah, it's in there. The people, you know, they used to say these vans are following them around, and I was up in Chicago, and you know, lecturing for the National Health Federation, we had a Clinton Miller and another guy lobbying in Congress so we could keep the vitamins that you all take out there if you're smart. There's no nutrition in the food anymore. When you take those vitamins, it's because the National Health Federation, which is now fighting the latest issues, so that they're trying, always trying to take the vitamins, I mean, you know, the right to health choices away from us. That's what always goes on. Now it's the codex thing. But back in the day, these people came out one day, and I was outside the in Rosemont, Illinois, right outside of Chicago, by the O'Hare Airport, where we did the show every year, the Holiday Inn, big old Holiday Inn. We did 20 shows there. I did, anyway. And they said these people, the old couple said this van had parked outside their apartment building, and it was aiming a satellite-looking, something like a dish network or a direct TV dish, directly at their building, and specifically at their window of their apartment, which faced the street.
Right.
And so I said, well, you know, and then they said these people in the van moved in next door.
Right.
And when they slept at night, they felt this heat on them, obviously radiation. But, you know, produces heat. Stick your hand in the microwave and find out for yourself. So, I thought, well, you know, we get a lot of it in NHF. We got a lot of people. I'd say the average at that time audience was over 40 in the NHF. Today, you know, there's a lot of young people, but in these days, this is like in 72, 73, 74, somewhere in there. Actually, it's around 74. In those days, the people at NHF were usually 60 up, you know. So we had lots and lots of 80 and 90-year-old people that are fairly healthy. They were mostly vegetarians, and they knew how to live a long time. But a lot of them were still senile. You know, they had senility because of the, you know, that was the precursor to Alzheimer's disease, is senility. And,
yes.
And that's from the aluminum and all that, and we were just learning that at the time. But I figured that's what these people had. So then the next show we did was down in Miami, in Florida. And we got down there, and people came by after the show was over and grabbed me in the hallway. And these people, by the way, in Chicago got me as I was getting into my van to go to the airport and catch a plane. That's, you know, so that this happened again down there in Florida. And then pretty much the same story, and then it happened three or four or five more times, and then I realized these people didn't even know each other. You know, they were going to NHF meetings, but they certainly didn't know each other because we had thousands of people in every area.
Right.
Them. It's not unusual to have 500 to 1,000 people in your audience in those days. So anyway, I did some study and some research on it and found out that this, in fact, was happening. You know,
right.
Started back in MK Ultra, and then John Hopkins University was doing a lot of stuff, and they were the ones, the main guys on the ET stuff. The ET thing was, you know, coming with started in the '40s. In 51, when Dr. Mendez named ET extraterrestrial extraterrestrial entity.
Right.
That's where what do you call it? Extraterrestrial biological entity. And that's where the EB came in, the name EB. And so I did all that, and I'd actually lectured with people and been on the campus of John Hopkins. So it was starting a lot of things that I'd seen. That's why I wrote that. If you look how I wrote that book, it's because I wrote it in a way that I was there. You notice that?
Yes. I'm very aware of that. Yes.
When you get into a lot of the different companies like Hughes, I used to hang out with the ex-director of the CIA at the time, and he was the project manager for the satellites in Hughes, and he was one of my clients. And all this starts. I start flashing back on all this stuff, and I realize this is the Hughes thing, and the 3,000 companies that I visited was that was all in the past. That already happened, and I left that field over 5-6 years ago. But I'd spent my life since 14 years old in it, and I was in my late 20s, early 30s at the time when I got in the NHF. So I had a real interesting view on things. So this made sense to what Bud Whelan was, the guy from Hughes. Bud Whelan, it's in my book.
Right.
I read about him. He's the guy that was ex-CIA. I didn't know he was ex-CIA when I worked with him. He was a very inspirational, very smart engineer at Hughes. And he was vice president of Hughes in one of the research divisions on satellites. And I met him through just, he's a cool guy, you know what I mean?
Right,
and he was. But he told me a lot of stuff because he was not in the CIA anymore, and you know, was declassified at the time. He was, and I had a security clearance anyway, so it didn't matter. I had a secret clearance. I had to be in all those companies.
Right.
And so I learned a lot. So when these guys hit the street with these vans, I realized what CRW and Hughes had been working on, and a lot of projects I'd been in, which they claimed to be satellite projects, but they were actually projects that were going to be launched from satellites that probed the human mind.
Right.
That's how I got into it. So mm-hmm. the first, I do, yeah, but I know about radiation. I know about standing waves. So I got my slide rule out, and actually I don't use a slide rule, but I'm using it as a term here. I got my engineering pencil out and designed the star orb to reverse that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went around mm-hmm. to the people. I collected a log of the people. Now I was collecting a log. And mm-hmm. I introduced them to the star orb and suggested that they use this device in their apartments. And in those days, they weren't very expensive because gold was cheap, because we used their gold-plated for conductivity. And
right.
They started using them, and they said that there was this heat would be no longer there.
Right.
And then we got into, we found out that a scientist from, I forget what university, went over and tried to X-ray the Great Pyramid for hidden chambers.
Mm-hmm.
What he found mm-hmm. out was that the shape of the pyramid, as we had already found out, you know, X-rays are gamma rays, basically. You know, they're up in that frequency range, and it doesn't
right.
matter what frequency a wave that hits in the pyramid, it will deflect it enough to reverse it on itself and create its own standing wave and destroy itself. It becomes self-destructive.
Right.
So that's when we came out with the pyramid over the bed as a Faraday shield.
Right.
And we tried making, some people wanted us to put a cover over them, and we tried different things, but we found that leaving them open and just putting a gold capstone on them, the energy would end up bouncing off up the inside of it, and that capstone would neutralize it. It would just go up there and dissolve.
Right.
So
right.
the Fortamid and the star orb became huge. You know, we still sell the heck out of them. You know, they're still around, and actually we've improved on them. I took a star orb over to Japan, and I was giving a seminar in Kyoto,
mm-hmm.
and I had 500. Heads of the largest companies, including Kawasaki, in my audience. And I
right.
explained this radiation phenomenon to them. They were aware of it, but they didn't know how it affected them. And I had Mrs. Suzuki as my interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
She was the former, actually still present, interpreter for the president of General Motors at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But she was a damn good interpreter, is what I'm saying here.
Okay.
And so she basically, told me how, to my language to their language, how it really went. And it's like, when I delivered this eloquent lecture, it kind of got translated to this.
Mm-hmm.
Take a star orb, put in large room where engineers meditate and create.
Mm-hmm.
Ground wire on pipe or ground, and engineering creativity become much better and more money for company and engineer. That's
mm-hmm.
basically how it went across,
mm-hmm.
she told me.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave Kawasaki one of them, and they mm-hmm. took it into their engineering lab, and they, this is all the explanation they got, because we had the language barrier from what I teach over there. It doesn't come out as clear as you would think in Germany and Swedish and other languages, it translates pretty easy. You know, like we say oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon, and Stickstoff, Wasserstoff, et cetera. In German, there's words for it, but in Japanese, they have problems. Their language isn't really set up scientifically. At least it wasn't then. It is better now. You know, so to cross interface with English,
yeah,
English slang, because our American version of English is basically English slang, from if you
mm-hmm.
look at the proper English from England and how it's all laid out, so in the age of the language. So anyway, they bought one, and I got back to the U.S. about a month later, and they bought about 50 more. They were getting results.
Right, right.
And it just spread all over Japan. Now, today, they just make their own, obviously, because I couldn't patent the design. I did have a copyright on the name, but they just went ahead and made their own. They're still making them. They're all over Japan today. So, I mean, they picked up on it right away. And they're also the same people that, when the Tamiflu got over, they recognized the angel dust factor right away, and they banned it from people that are 19 years old or younger are not allowed to take it. It's against the law and to take any of American vaccines.
Right, 20 years of age.
Actually, 19 is it. And that's in my book, too.
Yeah, I have... I'm open to the Tamiflu here, and may I read something here?
Go ahead, read it whatever you want. It's like you're reading it, not me, you know, because
I'm glad
other people get excited, so, you know.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. Ingredients in the Tamiflu vaccine now being prepared for pregnant women and children and the elderly are highly toxic and poisonous and are some of the elements used to produce PCP or angel dust psychotropic drugs.
Right.
I'm finding that how hideous these companies are. They should all be in jail.
Oh, well, the director's already been there and done that.
Yeah.
They buy their way out. These guys are filthy rich. This is
no question
about it. Control the AMA. Today, the president of the AMA said to Obama, "We approve your health care program." Well, let me tell you something about a health care program. The last person that I would want to approve my health care program would be anybody associated with the American Medical Association.
Because they'll
just stick you up with all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather go with Kaiser Permanente or somebody, which is a middle-of-the-road company that at least you can trust because you know they're lousy, but they at least work.
Yes.
Now the AMA is stepping in trying to do the health care program. That's all we need.
Hello?
That's
hello? Somebody calling in? Hi.
Yeah,
can you speak up a little bit? We can't hear you.
Yeah, you got to get loud.
Oh, sorry about that. I have a question on the receptor.
Yeah, what is it? Go ahead.
Okay, I have the chakra receptor, and I was wondering how that differed from the ones that don't have any gems on the bridge.
Now, what is it again now?
Yeah, repeat that.
Yeah.
How does the nuclear receptor that have gems on the bridge differ from the ones that don't?
Oh, okay, good question. Okay, those of you that couldn't hear the question, you're talking about the comparison between the nuclear receptor and the disc, right? And the question was, how does the nuclear receptor with a bridge and a gemstone work in comparison with a receptor, with meaning a disc, that doesn't have one? Is that what you're asking for?
Yeah.
That's your question?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. The nuclear receptor is something that we developed at NASA in optics called the Cassegrain design. And the Cassegrain is when you take the focal length of something and you reverse it with mirrors, special optical mirrors, and shorten the focal length. Like in a telescope, when that's done, a 20-foot-long telescope can now be, 6 or 8 inches long. It's just a reduction in the focal length of the optics. And the nuclear receptor, the bridge, reflects, it's built out a certain level, and it oscillates, it has a gemstone in it, and the gemstone oscillates between the field of your body and the field of that grid pattern, and then eventually returns back to your body. So it's just, the bridge is set up as an oscillator, it's a local oscillator, okay, it's a resonant tuning. So that's why the bridge is there, that's why the stone is there, and eventually the energy is transmitted back and forth through the little hole in the middle back to your central nervous system. And all of the... We used to just talk about the aura field, but now we find that quantumly it goes back and instantaneously works with the photons in your cells, all the cells. Every time you use any form of energy to move, lift something, or anytime you want to breathe or, heart functions, autonomic subconscious functions, it requires a chemical activity, which then, in the chemical activity, electrons move around on the in the orbits around their respective protons, and there's lots of those in every cell in your body and every organ in your body. And this movement used to be thought, in the old school, this movement was creating electricity, and electricity was going through the cells via basically the, what's called tubules in the cells to the mitochondria and all the different areas of the cells. But now they found out that that's not true. The tubules are nothing more than quantum ducts, D-U-C-T-S, ducts. And what happens is that when you introduce a quantum energy like the nuclear receptor, every single cell in your body instantaneously, without any line of sight, okay, forget the little hole in the center, is affected. And this is called quantum biology. And so that so we're actually learning more about a product we've already got. The other object that you're talking about in comparison has no bridge. We make a what we call a cosmic doubloon, which is a nuclear receptor with no bridge on it. And what that's used for is a pH changing and quantum changing device for foods, water, etc. But it has no entanglement network on it to get it back into your body. The entanglement network is the stone, the gemstone that resonates with the weakest organ or weakest cell structure in your body. That's why we muscle test people for a nuclear receptor, and anybody can have a you know, what we call a cosmic doubloon, you know, or you know, a nuclear disc, however you call it. So the one's a quantum device, and the other one is just a straight energizing device, basically, that puts out a life force form that will change the pH and stuff and get rid of poison. So if there's a little bit of chlorine in the water, for example, of a glass of water, when you set the glass of water over the disc, the chlorine is neutralized. Different process. So basically you're looking at two different processes. The nuclear receptor is a much more complicated device, you know, because it is a quantum device. I hope you understand what I said. Maybe you didn't, you know. That helps any at all or not?
Yeah. It sounds very clear to me.
Yeah, well, you know, really, you're used to this stuff, but people are starting to ask some pretty cool questions. You know, there's enough receptors out there now that there's a, you know, inquisitiveness in human nature that we're starting to address almost on a daily basis now.
I've been experimenting with my nuclear receptor and one of my clients and her little doggie. And what I did was, I'm wearing my nuclear receptor and the projector both, but what I was doing was actually changing her energy on the table to be extremely bright. And the dog wanted to come up on the table because he was feeling the aura and the energy that was building up in her body. And what happened was the little girl dog, she brought her up on the table and started to lick the sheet around her feet and her legs. And I'm starting to find out that animals are really, really subject to a lot of beautiful energy.
Oh, yeah. I've told you the story about the first dog we ever sold a nuclear.
No. What
we
happened?
We sold a lot of dogs. We were up in at the Honda reservation. It's a big operation up in White Mountain, Arizona, and there's a, like 800. It's a big casino like Vegas kind of thing, kind of like the thing near us here. So anyway, we're up there, and this lady that put the seminar on had a Saint Bernard, and she said, "Can we put a receptor on a dog?" And I said, "Yeah." And she says, "Well, what stone does he need?" So I went over to the dog and get what stone he needed. But I, you know, I put you know, a color in my head and patted the dog and see when he was most relaxed. You know, that was the most dog. And so I picked the gemstone, and then so we ordered the receptor for. He had a silver, solid silver receptor, old school design. And but instead of having a chain on it, we got him a nice leather strap.
Okay.
So Well, because we figured a chain wouldn't be good for a dog if you ever got caught in something.
Right.
So I was up there after he'd had that thing about a month. I went back up there because they were a big client anyway. Because they had a 38 irradiator system, if you can imagine.
Wow.
That. 38 irradiators. Wow. And they had a crystal in there in the center of that system that probably weighed 1,500 pounds. I mean, they really went all out.
Yeah.
White Mountain people. So anyhow, I was out there in the yard one day with the dog, and I was passing a very friendly old St. Bernard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Has your scepter on. He'd been wearing it for a couple months. And that dog is always would give you a nice lick on the face and
mm-hmm.
you know, just a sweet dog. Well, I start, you know, dogs like to be scratched on their neck and between their front legs, you know, up between their
mm-hmm.
legs. They like scratching there. So I was scratching him there, and he's getting really... So I start moving up his neck to his receptor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as I am scratching this dog, it's a true story, so help me God, as I get close to the receptor, I hear this growl. And as I get closer to the receptor, this dog starts growling louder and louder. So I took my hand down, I put it on the top of his neck, because the receptor is obviously in the bottom of his neck, and I start rubbing down the cord, you know, the leather cord, you know, down the cord to where the receptor was hanging. I got about two-thirds, well, halfway down his neck, from the top of his neck, halfway down the neck, you know, say there's a 35-inch band around this dog's
mm-hmm.
neck, so you got a 15-inch
mm-hmm.
from top to bottom, or maybe he is a big dog, probably 40 inches. And he's a
right.
big dog. So there's 20 inches line of sight from the top to the bottom. So I get down about halfway, and the growl starts again.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I keep going. Now I'm like about 6 inches away from the receptor, and this gentle dog is growling, and he's licking at me. And as I get a little bit closer, the teeth, he's like snarling at me. You know, I'm seeing those front teeth.
Right.
And I'm realizing if I went any further, I was about to get a dog bite.
Yeah.
As soon as I moved my hand away, he was just like a cool, mellow dog.
Yeah.
And that was my very first experience with an animal and a nuclear receptor and a silver one.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
amazing.
We've
sold them. A lot of people, you know, cats like them, dogs like them.
Mm-hmm.
More mm-hmm. dog owners than cat owners, but because cats will.
Yeah.
They're kind of big,
so,
average cat, you know.
Yeah. Well, in my room, I have the flamethrower.
Yeah.
I have the...
white one? Did you get your white one yet or not?
No, I haven't got that yet. But what I'm doing is the flamethrower... I had that, you know, placed, and I had my projectors placed. The crystals underneath the table, that changes all the time. The energy of that just changes amazingly when somebody's lying on the table. But this dog got back on the floor and was totally relaxed. I mean, just totally. And her master, she was saying to me, that dog has never been this calm in her life.
Yeah, I've heard
so,
that a lot.
Yeah, I presume that it's from the energy, from the flamethrower, from the projectors. Everything's firing in my room, you know, because I can see the energy very clearly.
If you were to summate all of those energies, the Tibetans have a word. It's called FOHAT, Fohat energy. That's
really.
Yeah, when you take all this and. So that's what it is. Go ahead. I mean, interrupt. That's what it is.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So she was amazed, and she's getting better herself. She's not a very well woman, and she's getting a lot better. So there's a tremendous amount. I don't mean to get away from the drugs, but there's just a tremendous amount of energy when you start talking about the nuclear receptors that you can emit. And it doesn't even take any work. I mean, it's just there. And it's just, it's amazing the amount of energy and love that comes off of you. And I know it works. I mean, I've seen it. I've done it a million times with the nuclear receptor. And it's actually the frequencies that are in the room are much, much higher. I mean, higher than I've ever known before. So I know there's a lot of energy coming in. But the idea of it is that the nuclear receptor is starting to really hum.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm noticing that more and more, Fred, and it's vibrating more. So there's a lot going on with these nuclear receptors, more than probably what I know. I mean, you probably know a lot more than I do. I'll tell you what, I
didn't know about the quantum element. We were always, what we tested was the auric offset, you know. In other words, the synapses are firing in the brain, creating an electrical field by conducting electricity down through 72,000 nerves that are in the spinal cord. And we know that that's an aura. You can photograph it. You can change it. And we knew that if you were to tap into just one line, let's say the aura, you know, magnetic field, you know, auric field, it's 10,000 lines. This is an example. It's a thought experiment. But if you... And if you're sick or you're healthy or unhealthy, there's going to be several lines in there that are incorrect in color. Okay. Let's just say that it's the color of the rainbow, which is string theory.
Right.
String theory tells us that every atom in our body comes from a super string. Fine. But it also gives us freedom of choice and consciousness so that...
Yes.
We can make mistakes to our body, which we all do, including me.
Right.
And
right.
So pretty soon, something's broken or breaking. You know, and let's say just say the thyroid. So the thyroid green line is no longer green. It's maybe supposed to be an emerald green as the proper color, the center of
right.
it, and it becomes let's say army green, which is kind of an icky thing.
Right.
So we put an emerald on the person's body, and the emerald then would send a clear shot of that frequency, that wavelength of the, because the emerald has an aura, you know, real gemstones, not synthetics, they only those real
yes.
things now, sends out a perfect 562 nanometer line, which is emerald green, right?
Yes.
That then goes through that little hole in the receptor and goes into the body and corrects, say the army green would be more towards red, it'd be like 580 nanometers. But now
right.
it's corrected down to 561 over about a year's period because it has to first go affect the blood because that wrong frequency is affecting the blood. The blood's not quite pure enough to allow the thyroid gland to function as it should. Eventually, of course, it functions. So we always looked at that as the way they worked. But we now find, with more research, but that's only part the way they work. Now we find that, and this is through testimonials and research, and soon when we hit the PAIR lab at Harvard and a few places we're going with this stuff, you'll find, well, we already found it, and they'll just verify what we found. And this is what the FDA wanted to know this. Some people in the FDA, I'm not going to name any names, but know this stuff works. They actually do. But we cannot make a claim. They watched me like a hawk on that, and I promised I wouldn't make any claims until we did the studies. We're about ready to do the studies now. It's coming right up on the thing.
Right.
Because we've done our own in-house studies. But what we now find is that because of SPDC, spontaneous down conversion, which is the second thing that occurs in a crystalline structure, you can look it up on the internet, it's a quantum effect that simultaneously not only hits the aura, but it hits every single cell that's targeted by quantum entanglement, in this case green, 561 nanometers, entire body. And they're all sapped into perfection.
Yes.
Follow me?
Yes.
And because of that, because we understand the entanglement, if a person aligns their mind to that,
yes,
it the process is enhanced 10,000 times. So instead of having to wear a receptor for a year to correct a thyroid problem and then maybe move on to a pituitary program with a problem which was less than a thyroid problem.
Right.
They can do it in a matter of hours. It's that crazy now. And that's what you're seeing. That's why you're saying they're firing harder and this and that. Because psychically, you know, I don't think scientifically you know the explanation, but psychically you're like a remote viewer and you're starting to go quantum now, which is cool. And that's
because
we're part of the hologram and that's what David Bohm, the leading, one of the greatest physicists in the world, who died in 1992, never got him on a show because they didn't have a show then, but would have had, should have had, and a lot of these other guys that are out there, like Michio Kaku and Leonard Susskind and Stephen Hawking, all respected David Bohm and his hologram theory.
Yeah.
And it's coming up in spades, and I guarantee you, if he were around in 10 years, he'd get a Nobel Peace Prize for it.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Oh, this is wild stuff. This is real cool stuff we're playing with now.
Yeah. I'm starting to realize a Moldavite.
Oh, yeah. Sean Morgan, one of my friends who's been on this network and others, always wore a Moldavite. It's an ET quality. It's from another world.
Right. What I want to do, I think, is send back my projector, have
John,
the diamonds
Moldavite
taken out, and put Moldavite in them.
Yeah. Oh, boy, you're going to go for a ride now.
I know.
A little green man in your backyard.
It's what's happening with the Moldavite, because I can change things over, as you know, and the light is becoming stronger, much stronger. And so I don't know why it's strong as the diamonds, but something is going on with the Moldavite, and I'm not sure yet, so I need to experiment with it, but I think I'm sending my necklace back to get Moldavite stones put in.
Yeah, I'm just holding the receptor up to the camera here so people can see what I've been talking about, because we got a huge amount of viewers coming in on the Ustream now that can look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get your $300 computer yet so you can go on Ustream?
God, I've been doing a lot of other stuff, as you know, so it's not something that I'm doing right now, but I'm trying to get there as fast as I can.
Yeah.
But I'm really experimenting with a lot of different things right now, and I'm experimenting with Moldavite really heavily.
Yeah, Moldavite's very powerful. Sphenes. I'll tell you another one, sphenes.
Yes.
You might have some right here. I can show the audience. Here's some sphenes. Okay. A sphene, I ended up buying the world supply of them.
Really?
Yes, yeah, I did. There was a company over in Hong Kong that I got them from, and they wouldn't carry them anymore. And so I found out how to buy sphene. And let me see if I got a light here. I can show everybody. Here's one. The sphene is I forget what country they come from. Let me see if you can. No, they're not going to see anything. A sphene is spelled S-P-H-E-N-E. All right? You might look into this yourself.
Okay.
It depends on where it comes from in the world. They come from different places in the world, like South America.
Okay.
And sometimes over in India, but rarely from India. And they have these particular colors. And they're to describe the color, it's a really strange green. It's a very pleasant green, but it's a very strange green. And and these stones, I had a heck of a time trying to hold this up to the camera. I got it at the camera here. See that weird guys out there? See that weird green? It's kind of hard to. Yeah, there you go. I'm just. Pardon me that those of you don't have a camera, but showing the weirdness of the green.
Right.
There it is. See that strange color? Okay.
Yeah, I'm
sensing
it.
That color is a combination of the thyroid gland and the pituitary gland, so it's a reddish green.
Okay.
Which controls the trop. And what happens is. And you might think about this, is putting these in, is that it's a psychic, it's a psychic enhancer. Okay.
Okay.
And so what happened was, I did research and went to every single supplier in the world of sphenes, and I bought everything that was for sale at the time, and nothing is really, they're very rare. Number one.
Okay.
I don't know how many I got in here. I've got a few others, but they're a great big one here. No, it's a blue misty quartz, I think. Yeah. I thought I had a big one here. I even have some raw material over in Laguna. What's that? That's a Moldavite. The Moldavite is a very similar color. I mean, have you seen the Moldavites that have the green? I've got a Moldavite. I've got an actual meteorite Moldavite here.
Really?
Show it to everybody. Everybody seems to be interested in this now. All right, I'm going to pull this out. It's the same color almost as the, now this is an actual meteorite. This land, I think there was what, they come down in falls. I think it was in Thailand where the last biggest fall was, meaning the meteorites. But that is a moldavite that's very similar in color as a steen.
Okay.
There's an interrelationship. I just held it up. If you go to the archives, you can't do that. You have to go on there. If you go to the archives, the Ustream, when you get your thing, you can see it.
Okay.
So there is a relationship between the two of them.
Right.
But I do have some moldavites here that will fit in your projector.
Yeah, I want to send that back, Fred, and get the moldavite put in. And could you do me a favor? Is the scheme expensive?
The steen or the moldavite?
Well, the moldavite, I know what the moldavite is. But what's the scheme? Is that expensive? I want to do, I want to experiment with it.
Probably in the ruby range. It's not that much.
Okay.
Mikkel knows all the prices, but it's not like a diamond. And you got diamonds.
Right.
We're going to take the diamonds out. We're going to send those back to you because
they're
worth a lot more than the steens, obviously.
Right.
You want to keep those in case you want to switch it back.
Yeah, I want to experiment with a scheme.
A steen?
It might be a lot of fun to do the steam. Steam, pardon me.
Yeah, okay, whatever you want. I got to make sure I can find. Got those. I just found a triangle cut one here. I'm going to light it up for everybody. I can't get this. Might have a little more color in it. This is a triangular one. You know, when you're playing around with this stuff, it might be just easier for you just to get yourself another silver receptor and keep the platinum one, projector, intact, and just build you up a fairly inexpensive silver one to play with rather than tearing up the one you've got.
Yeah, that's true.
I would consider that, and you know, you get your wholesale price because you're a distributor.
Right.
Consider that more than tearing up the one you got now.
Yeah, all right.
It's because you don't need platinum in a moldavite, what you're looking for now is you're looking for the quantum. You know, what these things are, you're looking for the quantum connectivity of what these things do. In other words, you want to open the door.
Yes, I do.
Okay, what you got on there is a blaster. You know, you blast mountains down with that.
Right.
So open the door and then put that other one back on. That would be my suggestion.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Right.
And you know, we have our payment plans and all that stuff, so it's not going to be a big deal. Nothing we can't get on the fire tomorrow for you, you know?
Well, I'll call Mikkel and I'll talk to her tomorrow, so I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, but you see, what I'm trying to get across here is I want everybody to understand that this technology, the science that we've been doing at Paradigm, you know, the first receptor was given to us by the Pleiadians in 1981.
Right.
And likewise, a few months later, the projector was given to us from the Andromedans. But the first projector came out. I'm just getting my patents now. The patent office called 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to call it a projector. The
really?
Patent office called me up and said, you've got a couple patents sitting there, and we want to call it the gemstone mounting something or other. So I said, what? You know, because it holds the gemstone mounting something or other. And we don't see it projecting anything. This is a lady I'm dealing with.
Right.
So
my
patent attorney got involved. Obviously, they paid a lot of money for that.
Sure.
$5,000 for a friggin' patent these days?
Wow.
Yeah. Suck that one up.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, the receptor cost me almost $3,000.
Right.
But anyway... And then the copyrights, when the patent runs out, then I have the copyrights to keep it going, and that cost me another couple thousand.
Okay.
But bottom line is, we did get I forget what the patent is. I'll have the patent number momentarily on the projectors.
Right.
What threw her off is that the big ones, the standalones, have two gemstones, and the ones you wear around your neck have four.
Yes.
This is last week, you know.
Yeah,
talking to my patent attorneys out of Orange County, the largest patent attorney group in the world, and it was hilarious. And the patent attorney, the guy that handles me, there's two of them actually that I deal with. I've dealt with them for years, and they use my stuff, and they know what it does.
Right,
okay?
Right.
These are not just ordinary attorneys that should be going over the cliff in a bus with one empty seat being a misjustice. These are really hardworking guys that deserve their money. And the bottom line is that They were as frustrated as I was.
Mm-hmm.
To some woman, some lady, could not understand what these things do. Couldn't get it. You know, but finally, we compromised on the name, and the patent, I think, has been granted. I don't have the number yet. But anyway, that was just a week ago.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
But I would think a woman with, the women to me are closer to the angelic kingdom than men are. I would think that naturally, intuitively, they would sense something in those drawings. These drawings cost me $1,000 to get all these drawings. Now, every angle and two different devices. And I mean, this stuff ain't cheap to get. You know, you get a patent, you got to have some money. People wonder why our products cost what they do. Well, when you take out the cost of patents, the cost of design, the cost of molds, $50,000 or more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to do an engineering repayment so that we can develop more products. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The expenses right now, I've already spent close to $250,000 on the X1, the adjustment machine, QBAM, and we'll probably have a $250,000 grant here momentarily.
Mm-hmm.
With the first production, that's $500,000 to bring something to the market.
Yes.
And we're well on the way, but, I mean, people, so if we sell these things for $150,000, which is about the price of the X1's going to be,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, without all the onboard stuff, I got EKG machines and all kinds of stuff that's outboard stuff. There's 3 or 4 racks of stuff you can get to make it go more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when you figure out the money put into one of these things, it'll take 10 of them or more before we break even. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now you got to make money and pay back your investors. That's what the next people start doing.
That's for sure.
People don't realize, you know, the cost.
Well, your products are so good. I mean, it's just really incredible. What I need to discuss with you is something I've been doing for the last 6 months.
What's that?
I've been able to actually project myself into the projector and look out at the diamonds and look through the room inside the projector. So I don't know what's going on.
That's
there.
That's called entanglement. All you're doing is you're entangling the field between your body and the stone. And, that's not uncommon.
Okay.
You know, you got to understand about you know frequency and vibration. And we're going to run out of time after this one. I'm trying to make it brief. We only see between 400 and 700 angstroms.
Yes.
We only hear between probably 70, 80 cycles per second and about
mm-hmm.
12 kilohertz average person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our feeling, we can only feel in a temperature range somewhere between freezing and maybe 120 degrees.
Okay?
So that's feeling, right?
Right.
We can only breathe in a limited, adjusted oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon dioxide atmosphere.
Okay.
You look at the spectrum of the universe, and you realize that light frequencies go way below 400 angstroms and way beyond 700 angstroms, colors of
right.
the rainbow.
Right.
You realize temperatures go to absolute zero, which is, 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Or
right.
50 degrees Kelvin below zero, and temperatures go up into the hundreds of millions of degrees in a thermonuclear star,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
realize that we are very limited in what's going on around us. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
So when you start getting into the use of the receptor projector and some of the other stuff that we've designed over here and built and sold,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
your bandwidth of everything, I mean everything, expands.
Yes.
Okay? So you're starting to go into probably 700, probably going into, probably going down into 400, 300 nanometers, which is ultraviolet, which is higher frequency, shorter wavelength. Okay? We're
right.
measuring the wavelength here.
Right.
And so you're starting to explore beyond the ultraviolet.
Yes,
and that's why you're asking for these funny colored scenes and these strange colored things, which have a interference pattern quantum interference patterns
mm-hmm.
in those bandwidths beyond the human perception. And that's
yeah.
where you want to go now.
Yes.
You understand? You
yes,
have
I understand.
Yeah, you have progressed.
I understand. Yeah.
Okay, and this is what happens because you've been using this stuff since, what, 10 years or so?
10 years, yes.
Yeah, and this is what happens to people that conscientiously use it for a long period of time. You have evolved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Like the Lawnmower Man. Go see the movie The Lawnmower Man. The guy starts out an idiot and he becomes a genius. This is what happens, not because of me or what I've done, but because of what this technology has done that I have been fortunate enough to spearhead. But the things that I've developed have literally been relying on hundreds of other people plating, tooling, and on and on and on, and to do to bring this, you know,
yeah.
to where we're at.
Well, I'm thirsting for more knowledge, so that's
yeah,
probably
that's
why I'm playing with that.
Far. Okay, well, anyway, this was a fun show.
Yes, it was.
Go ahead and put your... Are you still doing your show or not?
No, I stopped for a little while, Fred. I'm got some stuff, well, you know what's going on, so
okay.
I'm going back on in 2 weeks. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. For more information, call 1-800-729-2603, 1-800-729-2603. Steve Barish, Bella Boo, Buddy Boo back here. Hey, Buddy Boo. All make this program possible. And we'll do our CAN show Saturday night, and we'll see you next weekend. More information, just Fred Bell at Paradigm. If you don't know how to find Paradigm, just type in the search engine, Dr. Fred Bell. Thank you. Get on the camera, don't you? Buddy Boo.